Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team and a caregiver of a patient with TSC on the current and emerging management strategies for TSC-associated seizures. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Jazz Pharmaceuticals. In this podcast, a paediatric neurologist and an epilepsy specialist are joined by a caregiver of a patient with TSC to discuss the clinical burden of TSC-associated seizures and review existing treatment options and the remaining unmet needs.
Hello, my name is Professor James Wheelis. I am Professor and Chief of Pediatric Neurology at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to our program today. I am joined by Professor Katarzyna Kotulska, who's head of the Department of Neurology and Epileptology at the Children's Memorial Health Institute in Warsaw, Poland. Also, Ms. Lisa Moss, who is Vice President of Donor Relations at the TSC Alliance and a mother of a child with TSC based in Silver Springs, Maryland, in the United States. In this section, we will be considering management strategies for patients with TSC-associated seizures. So first, let us maybe start with discussing kind of the clinical burden of tuberous sclerosis complex. And Lisa, you've lived this, so I mean, I think we can say it, but you probably can say it much better.
Thank you so much. The clinical burden is definitely pretty tremendous. Evan was diagnosed with epilepsy at age 3 months. He started having seizures within just a few weeks of life. And over the course of the last now 19 years, we've tried multiple medications. We watched him have over 2,600 seizures. He was born with 4 brain tumors. He underwent brain surgery on 2 separate rounds of brain surgery, trying to gain seizure control, and lots of different medications. And it seems like with TSC, there's always a surprise just around the corner. So we've struggled with having time periods where things are going really well, followed by time periods where things are going very poorly.
And I think, I mean, the challenge is obviously dealing with seizures is significant enough in tuberous sclerosis, but then there's that diagnosis on top of it, and then all the other disease manifestations, along with the frequent intractability. I know for, you know, healthcare providers, I mean, that's, I guess, the challenge from our side of the fence we face too, is always seems like just as one thing is doing better, you hope everything else stays that way or something else doesn't shift too, right? It's kind of can be a moving target at times. Professor Kokulska, do you want to weigh in on maybe kind of treatment options, kind of where we've been and where we're maybe currently are with tuberous sclerosis complex?
I think we should focus on epilepsy today, because we don't have time for discussing all of the manifestations of the disease. And seizures are so frequent, as many as 90% of patients do experience seizures during their lifetime. So it's really a major problem in TSC. And in the majority of the patients, seizures start in the first year of life, most frequently between the 3rd and 5th month of life. Although some may have seizures from birth, epilepsy is far beyond seizures in TSC. As you know, it's associated with neuropsychiatric disorders. And we still do not have an ideal treatment that could be really curative for epilepsy associated with TSC, although the number of the treatment modalities increases over time. We have the medical treatment, we have the surgical treatment, we have the ketogenic diet and the modifications of ketogenic diet, and we do have the VNS. And the medical treatment includes more and more of different drugs, including standard anti-seizure medications, mTOR inhibitors, and recently approved cannabidiol.
Yeah, I think TSC is the one area where, you know, historically we kind of borrowed, if you will, approved drugs that would work in, you know, the seizure types we were seeing in TSC that were tested in, you know, non-TSC patients and brought them into our TSC patients. I think probably the difference in my practice here is the TSC patients are often on many more other medications. So whether it's mTOR inhibitors, whether it's medications for behavior, other blood pressure. So the concept of being very careful with drug-drug interactions often comes up more here in my patient population. I think often the management is a little trickier or requires more attention, I guess, however you want to think of it, than maybe my regular patient with hard to control epilepsy. And we use, you mentioned kind of the list, but I mean, we end up kind of using all the options available to us, right? And the unique difference is probably that this is the one area where we've had some unique therapies that are targeted, you know, to the underlying disease itself to try and help us out that we don't have in other epilepsies. So maybe touch on those, if you will, Professor Kotulska.
Yeah, I'm basically dealing with young children and infants with tuberous sclerosis. So vigabatrin is a primary drug for me and for my patients. We start usually with vigabatrin, even though it is associated with a substantial risk of adverse events associated with retinal toxicity. On the other hand, the risk of neuropsychiatric complications associated with drug-resistant epilepsy, I think it's much more important than the risk of visual field restriction. And this is, when I discuss it with the parents, this is basically their point of view, that they want to take the risk of potential toxicity much more than the risk of neuropsychiatric disorders associated with TSC.
We've had specific TSC therapies approved that are pharmacologic therapies. They've had advantages, but they also have some drawbacks too. So just kind of how those fit in. Vigabatrin, we know, is incredibly effective for TSC infantile spasms and can be for seizures in infants. We've had to balance that with the potential for toxicity to the eye and to the retina. The understanding and the use of mTOR inhibitors in tuberous sclerosis has been great for some of the other disease manifestations. As we've used those as an epilepsy drug, many of our patients are on it for other manifestations. It can help their epilepsy, but we know that in some, it's not been as beneficial for their epilepsy. I think other hope was that it would really help with some of the cognitive and behavioral side effects. And unfortunately, when we use it in older, I would say children, adolescents, we've not seen that. We'll see as we get into the use in infants and maybe in prevention, if we don't get that benefit. So we may still get there. And then we're seeing, I guess I would call more traditional medications that are being looked at specifically in patients with tuberous sclerosis associated seizures. So we can kind of look at what is their exact both safety and efficacy profile in this population, instead of just pulling them from other populations. Cannabidiol was the first one to do that and document efficacy in that population. That has been great. And while many of our patients are able to access that medication, that's not been universal. And I think there's some physicians that are still not aware that that medication did do a specific TSC-associated seizure trial. And we have real data from that on kind of dosing, safety, and efficacy. So Lisa, maybe you can help us out here, but I guess as a parent, you know, what advice would you give to, I guess, parents or even, you know, healthcare providers when they're having these discussions with families?
It is really hard to recognize when something is a side effect of a medication or a side effect of TSC or the seizures associated with TSC. You know, with Evan, we've had pretty much every imaginable side effect from, you know, run-of-the-mill drowsiness as he's adjusting to the medication to, you know, double vision, blurry vision, toxicity on meds, increased seizures due to medication, giving the opposite reaction that you're supposed to get. But we've been really through the gamut. And I think one of the things that our family has always found really hard is that it seemed like for, you know, a good solid 15 years, you are always titrating up and down on something. And some medication is new. And we fought really hard not to just add something new in, but to take something away also, because we didn't really want him to be on, you know, 10 medications. So we tried really hard to keep the number down to 3. And that's something that hasn't always been easy to manage, because it is kind of hard when you're taking something away and adding something in the same time frame or very close together. But the side effects can be challenging. And I think the biggest thing I would say to a family going through this is to, you know, not to keep those communications going well with your physicians, not give up on the idea that something can work, because even though you may have tried it before, it might work in a different combination. You know, we definitely can get to a point where we feel like we've tried everything. And our family is sort of in that situation. But, you know, there's always something that can make a difference.
You know, you need the both sides to kind of back and forth with the good rapport with, I think, the family and the physician to sort through a lot of those things. Because a lot of these kids, and as they grow up into adulthood, are very complex medically, to try and tease out what's best for them as well.
I think that's the major point, what's best for them, because you never know whether you should go for the number of seizures or the cessation of seizures or the quality of life in the patient, because it's sometimes you can add another drug and another drug and another drug, and even reducing the number of seizures with the new medications, but increasing the risk of toxicities, and what is best for the patient, what is better.
You know, I think your point is great. And this is, I always kid my colleagues, I always say, you know, what we've just talked about really is precision medicine, right? I mean, that has a different context in the modern era, but I mean, you're really trying to, you know, fine tune and adjust medicines for that single patient to make it, you know, fit them instead of, you know, everybody fitting into the same box kind of thing, same dose, same medicine. And that's really precision medicine at the end of the day. So, Lisa, do you want to maybe address the things that the caregiver can do to kind of maximize the patient visit with their physician, how they can prepare in advance so they can get the most out of that visit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that, you know, my husband and I created seizuretracker.com, in full disclosure, and it is a really useful tool that's being used across the board by a lot of families, but it really was created originally as a communication tool to help with exactly that. It's hard to remember all the seizures and frequency that you might have experienced at home, and then when you get to the doctor, to relay that information. So it's a great way of storing all the information so that you have it at your fingertips and can look at it with the physician or send it ahead. And I think it can be really helpful.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your input into this segment. And I think it's been a great discussion.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget, there are 2 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.